Blog Talk Radio.
Starting a business is one thing. Owning and operating a business is another. The former takes personal skill, risk, and a good idea. The latter takes guts, courage, a leap of faith, and a personal belief system that endures the joyride of perseverance. Today we'll talk with our Kitchen Cabinet Leadership Team member, William Wells, Jr., to find out the secrets of his success as a business owner, husband, father, grandfather, and community leader. Bill balances his business objectives with family and his longtime leadership role in the National Black MBA Association. What looks easy has taken years to perfect. Entrepreneurship is a painstaking, pioneering endeavor with high risks and often elusive rewards. But principled warriors like Bill Wells take stock of their vision and press forward. Also, we'll get a sneak peek at next week's multicultural conference and salute the four-time World Series champions, Boston Red Sox. Happy Halloween! This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the show. So glad that you have joined us today. It's a little cool out here, and we're getting ready for the youngsters who will come knocking on the door about 5 o'clock in my neighborhood. And typically we have about 200 kids who knock on the door and get candy. So I'm ready. All the candy's downstairs. And I hope wherever you happen to be, you're going to have a safe and happy Halloween. Well, it's been a very packed week. I have lots to talk about. I'm so excited about next week's multicultural conference, the seventh conference that my company has produced and executed in the last 5 years. So we'll give you the lineup of the speakers who are going to be there, 22 different speakers, 9 roundtable discussions, 2 keynote speakers, and people are registering every day. So I hope that if you're in the greater Boston area, if you can come, that you will also come to the Multicultural Symposium Series. And the website to get all that information is MSSConnect. That's MSSConnect.com. Go right there, click through to the page with the conference details, then click through, and you can register online. I'm really excited. So we'll talk about that a little later. And also, congratulations to the Boston Red Sox. They've done it again 3 times in the last 10 years. We'll give you a couple of highlights once the show concludes as well. Well, I've had this gentleman on several times. He has actually been our keynote speaker at the Multicultural Symposium Series 2 years ago. He's very instrumental in the Black MBA Association. I actually attended an advisory committee meeting last night. About 30 different people were there. We have a very high-energy president now, Gary Morton, who I've known since he was 16 years old, and he's doing such an outstanding job with the programming, with the people who were involved. I've never seen people who were so excited about putting together a list and making sure the list is correct, but he has those kind of people on board. But I digress. But I went to the meeting and had to mention the fact that Bill Wells was going to be on the show because he is the former chair of the National Black MBA Association and just respected and revered everywhere. But he's also a businessman, and I wanted to talk today about his business and what it really takes to succeed in business and balance family activities with the Black MBA, Kappa Alpha Psi, and all of the other organizations he is a part of, and he's a faith-based person as well. So Bill Wells, my friend of 20-plus years, hello, welcome back, and we're glad to have you here on the show, even though it's Halloween.
Okay, well, thank you, Carol. I'm glad to be back again.
Great. Well, tell us, give us, first of all, your background. I know your background in terms of being a part of corporate America. You're from the Midwest originally. You worked here in New Jersey for a number of years and went back to the Midwest and then ultimately started your business. So give us like the 5-second version of your life in a nutshell and how you transitioned from corporate America to being an entrepreneur, Bill.
Oh, okay. Well, very good. And welcome to all those who are listening in today, and we'll to use your comment as a launch, you know, the key today is be brief, be brilliant, and be gone. So I will move right into this. From a professional perspective, Carol, I'm really the benefactor of what used to happen in corporate America, and I was accepted into an accelerated executive development program, which was developed by AT&T. So I worked most of my career, 30-plus years, in the Bell system, both at an operating company level, been line staff, I've been in the field, I've been at corporate headquarters, and as you mentioned, I also had the opportunity as a part of my development to work in Wall Street for approximately 8 years on different assignments. So my career has spanned, and I came into this work, quite frankly, with a bachelor's degree in liberal arts, and so I did not have a specific functional discipline like finance or business. In fact, there were very, very, very few African Americans at that time at my college, Drake University in the Midwest, that were in the School of Business. That just wasn't considered a major avenue of career pursuit. But I had been identified by the local phone company, which was a part of the operating company, and brought into their program. So, fast forward, I went through a series of lateral assignments, vertical promotions. It was on a fast-track basis once I came into this program, and it was basically intended to identify people who had a capability of reaching a general management level within a certain period of time. So there was a high flesh-out rate in the first year, year and a half. I made it through that. And so subsequently, I was able to progress and continue my progression of lots of different assignments. And so I have a very, very broad general management background. I've been in finance, I've been in marketing, I've been in IT, I've served as a CIO, a chief information officer for a marketing division, strategy planning, you name it. The latter part of my career, though, is really what triggered me into the entrepreneurial sector. And that the last part of my career, again, in the Bell system, I was had the opportunity to go into HR, a field actually that I had avoided like the plague in my early days because I always wanted to be a part of the core business, not in a support staff function. But actually, the movement into human resources became really the catalyst for pulling all of my business background together, and it served me well. During that time in HR, I was exposed, and this now goes back into the late 1980s, early 1990s, I got exposed to what was going on corporately for around diversity and inclusion. We didn't call it that at the time, but that's essentially what it was. So that pretty much captured, 30-plus years. Once I left that company, I did join a consulting firm, an educational consulting firm that gave me another taste of what it takes to be an entrepreneur. So along the way, I guess I've been blessed with a lot of support, mentors, coaches, advisors, people such as yourself who have kind of guided me with pearls of wisdom along the way. And for that, I mean, I have so many, many, many people to thank for helping me get to where I am, far more that helped me get to there than detractors. So that's kind of the first piece.
So When did you start? So clearly we see such a strong corporate background that is the underpinning of your business activities. When did you actually start your business, and why did you start your business?
Okay. The actual trigger event, if you will, the tipping point for me was when, in fact, I was serving as the chief diversity officer. I was the vice president of global diversity for a Fortune 200 company, and our company went through a major restructure, much of that triggered by the economy, and essentially all the senior leaders in our HR department decided to leave. And I had the option to stay and felt like I did not have the support base around me that I needed, and plus our chairman and CEO actually left the company prematurely, and he was the primary champion around diversity in our company. So I left. And when I left, I applied. I looked at the similar role at different companies all across the country, and it became obvious to me that I was going to be faced with a relocation, what have you. And I had sons that I had just put into college, and quite frankly wanted to stabilize my base. So I had an option, go back into corporate and perhaps take an assignment and commute back and forth, because my wife is a educational professional, and we did not want to disrupt her movement, and she was in a doctoral program at the time.
Right.
So I was faced with the decision. I decided to explore some things, started networking like crazy, and as things would have it, not luck but a blessing, a very, very dear friend who was an assistant chancellor to the state university system knew the work that I did at the company and in strategic planning and hired me to become their diversity consultant. So that happened out of the gate, and that happened a couple times. And one thing led to another, and then I had to decide to get really serious about it, which I did. And that has served me. So basically that started, and I've been doing this now solidly for 10 to 12 years, dabbled with consulting prior to that, but went from being what I call a hobby, so to speak, to a real vocation. That became my brand. My brand is now I'm a diversity practitioner.
I think what I'm hearing in your journey, your life journey, is not only the success that you've had in corporate America, and we all know that corporations change and modify. I remember the comments that I made 22 years ago to the New England telephone company, which is now part of Verizon, and just encouraging and letting their staff and managers know that job security is gone forever, and they thought I was a nut. And job security is gone forever because their company sort of went through massive changes after that point in time. So you took advantage of your background, and you leveraged your contacts to begin your business. So it was not like you just starting out there and picking a leaf off the tree, I'm going to become a diversity consultant. You used your background and leveraged that to get your clients, and that's an important component because that's how I got started. I mean, a friend of mine works, he knew the kind of work that I did, my background, and I received a nice contract from the New England Telephone Company. That's how I started my training business. I was already in business, but that sort of shifted me from employment and temporary employment assignments, which I was delivering, to actually becoming a trainer and a consultant. So I'm hearing similar kind of threads in terms of leveraging relationships and contacts to then land you where you are now in terms of a business owner and a consultant.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I should mention that I also was fortunate enough when I left corporate, I took a severance package, and I had the opportunity to use an international executive coaching firm, Lee Hecht Harrison. And that was a part of my outplacement package. And quite frankly, I didn't feel like I needed it. I thought I had everything nailed down, my resume. I thought I knew it all. Well, finally, when I got serious about it, they helped guide me through understanding what was my core. And I would suggest to anyone listening, if you think that you want to go into being your own boss or having your own company, you've got to have more than a commitment and just passion. That'll just take you so far. Basically, at the end of the day, you're going to need clients. And so understanding my core, really, really understanding my core, my skill set and my capabilities, and as well as my commitment, that came through the executive coaching process. I could have probably gotten there on my own, but that just sped up the process. From there, I then launched, as I said, heavily into doing a lot of networking. Now, here's a key piece for entrepreneurs. I left the corporate sector where I was very, very comfortable. But once I became an entrepreneur, those contacts were no longer my primary base. I had to leverage my relationship with other entrepreneurs, and I had to be dealing with people who were in the same kind of business venture that I was, not the same discipline.
Right.
But you have to really change the people around you because people in the corporate sector just don't get it. I mean, they show up every day. You get a paycheck. You have a defined space, a defined project, what have you. As an entrepreneur, I mean, you will have those moments. You wake up in the middle of the night and you say, oh, my God, I don't have a job.
Yeah,
have no income. You know, we've all been there. So that will put you on it. The other piece was the push that I got from my spouse. My wife was, I'll say in a word, she was supportive, loving, dedicated, but she also expected that I would fulfill my part of the partnership, and that was
a sister girl.
Oh, you got that right, and still is, and still is. So,
and she is such a wonderful, wonderful partner for you and companion, Dr. Karen Wells. I actually have a picture of her on my blog and put it out on the e-zine today. But yeah, she's a sister girl. So I mean, their expectations, totally understand that.
Yes. So again, you know, the key to success is then to have a plan. I mean, it's great to have a vision, but if you don't have a plan, something to execute against, you will just simply meander through on a daily basis and you'll fall into things. That's not having a business. So you have to get real, real serious about that. So then along comes my connection to the National Black MBA Association, and all I can tell you is, once again, this provided me with literally hundreds, thousands of people who I could tap into as a part of my network. And I'm not talking about Facebook or instant messaging. I'm talking about people that I could meet face-to-face, people
right.
that I could call on the phone, people who I could ask questions and sometimes call and just cry the blues. And you need that,
mm-hmm.
especially as an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
You need a support system. My connection to the National Black MBA Association, while it didn't give me a job, I can tell you that many of the corporate clients that I have today have been affiliated with the association. So there are opportunities through networking.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, in addition to the Black MBA Association, what role has your social life, meaning playing golf, sports, social activities, played in your business in terms of business opportunities? I say that because I look at my brother is an attorney in Detroit. He does very well. He is an avid golfer. Golf, business, and lawyering have gone hand in hand for him for, you know, some 40 years. He's also your Kappa brother as well. So I know that
he's a good man.
Has worked well for him in his profession. What about you, Bill Wells, in your profession as a business coach, strategist, and entrepreneur?
Yeah, well, and a good point, Carol. The social piece actually is a dynamic that I think a lot of times we take for granted. But if you think about networking, being a part of the social, and I don't mean just social media, but networking with the purpose. The social component, I mean, there have been times where I've been involved in golf. I've gone to professional basketball games, being in a suite, you know, in a skybox. Same with
right.
football, going to college or football games. So there have been times, quite frankly, I've done some things on a social level that didn't have a particular appeal to me other than the fact that it placed me with individuals who got to know me. And one thing that I will tell anybody, people like doing business with people that they like. And I don't care how good you are or what kind of technology base you have or what kind of skill set, if people don't really inherently like you, you're not going to do business with them. They are not going to reach out to you. And I don't mean that they have to just, you know, you're not buds, you're not friends, but you've got to cross over that barrier of being an unknown entity to having social skills. That becomes your brand. Once your brand, and your brand is hard unless you do massive advertising or, you know, websites and stuff, which I've not done. All of my business, I'd say 99% of my business has come from word of mouth and referrals, not from advertising, and that's from friends who become advocates or colleagues and clients who become advocates. So the social piece cannot be underestimated at all. And I don't mean social just for fun and going
right.
out and, you know, hanging out in a bar. I mean actually, and you can do some of that as well. You know, I'm no purist. I mean, we all enjoy doing certain things. But, again, keep it in mind. If it's networking for a purpose, and that's to drive your business, then you'll figure it out.
And what about, have you gotten certified by the state of Minnesota, by the federal government? Have you gone through any of the business certification processes that are afforded to, as they call them, disadvantaged businesses or businesses of color owned by people of color? Have you taken advantage of that, Bill Wells?
Now, that's an interesting one, and you may not like my response, but
okay.
to be truthful, I've explored that. I've known the folks at, and here it's the Minnesota Minority Supplier Diversity Development Council, and it is, you know, it's a nationwide organization. I personally have not been certified. The services that I provide are professional services, and I have not found, in my case, those organizations to be that beneficial. Now, I will tell you, I've worked with a couple of other consulting firms, and I've either been employed by them or part of their staff, and they have had either the women's, you know, the WBE certification, or in some cases, it's what when that really comes becomes important is if you're doing any government contracting and things like that. But I have not found it to be a significant or even a real issue for what I provide. And I have pursued it. I've looked at it. I've met with the folks. Mm-hmm. I've actually done a preliminary application and ultimately decided not to go that route.
Because it seems like most of your business activities still remain within corporate America. So that would push you away from the government contracts and the work that are that's really required when you're doing a lot of heavy federal contracting work. And if you are a person of color or a woman, then those things can be to your advantage. In closing, Bill, tell us, give us a sense of hope and encouragement for someone who is listening right now. We have guests in the chat room. I know that we're going to have lots of people pick the show up after the fact. Someone who's going to listen to this show after the fact, and maybe it's time for them to make this move. They've done just like you, or they've worked for a short while or a longer period of time, and it's now time for them to make that move. Give us that kind of encouragement, and how would you advise that person who needs to make the leap of entrepreneurship?
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, first of all, I think the world of entrepreneurship is so wide open and with so many opportunities that I would encourage anybody who is really so inclined, just get prepared. You know, preparation will help you to not just meander into this work. But clearly, I mentioned before, and I would still say, have a plan. Make sure you know exactly what it is that you're offering. Because when you speak to people and they'll ask you, well, so what do you do? As you said to me in the beginning, you've got to be able to get to it quick. You don't have a lot of time. And they've got to understand the value of the work that you provide. So have a plan. I would also say, very importantly, make sure you've got some financial resources and other resources that you can tap into, because you've got to be able to withstand the ups and the downs of being an entrepreneur. And keep this in mind. When you do work, after the work's completed or whatever you negotiate, you give an invoice, you may not get paid for 60 days. Maybe
or
90. Days. So, or 90 or more. Or more.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to understand that whole economic flow. It's a much different process. So be prepared. Have your financial support ready. And then make sure that whatever you do, you don't create a vulnerability for those people who are dependent on you. Because, quite frankly, that's just going to create so much pressure that, you know, you just don't need that extra pressure on you. But persistence, I think focus, being persistent, and then being able to deliver. Once you get your work, you don't have an option as an entrepreneur. Because if you blow it, the word will spread so quickly. I always tell my clients when I'm working with them, and yes, most of them are in the corporate sector, but I tell them going in, I'm bringing my brand to you. I've got skin in the game. And if I'm doing work locally, I've got to make sure that my clients appreciate the work, like the work, and want to re-engage me. Because if they don't, guess what? Before I get to that next assignment with another corporation, word is already out.
They moved on. That's true.
Absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely.
I mean, and no one as an entrepreneur wants to be moved on. You want to be in place, and you want to be called and have repeat clients for years to come. You certainly have figured that out masterfully. So this has been enlightening for me, even though I've known you for a long time, Bill, just to get a lot of the background information and to see the progression that you have made as an entrepreneur. We're definitely going to have you back on for other topics and more to come, but thank you so much for being a guest on my program. Happy Halloween to you, and give my love to Karen. Take care, Bill.
I will do that, and thank you for the opportunity to be back on.
All right, take care now. Well, that is the long and short of one man's journey as an entrepreneur, now 10 to 12 years and climbing, but clearly with a very, very strong background that he has hinged himself on. We're going to have other entrepreneurs on so that you can get a sense of their career path and what they've done. Everybody is different. All of those ways that they have moved ahead are different, and so we're going to explore those for the weeks to come. So we thank you so much for that, Bill. Well, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the conference that's coming up next week. I'm working feverishly. This is my seventh conference in 5 years. We started the Multicultural Symposium series in 2008, having absolutely no idea that the economy was going to fall apart. But because this concept and its needs and the people that it serves is really strong enough, it has maintained and persevered, should I say, even though the economy has just really gone through the whirlwind. Now, 5 years later, seven conferences, we're really going strong, and I'm just more committed now than ever to really make this a very strong conference in this region and ultimately in this country and elsewhere. This is a very strong regional conference, and I'm excited because I now have, probably for the first time, a real composition of speakers that represents the Commonwealth, the state of Massachusetts. We're going to open up with our very, very special, always friend, Laura Smith, is our wonderful conference MC. She's going to kick us off in the morning, and then we'll hear a great dynamic speaker, LaToya Edwards. She is a news anchor and former Miss Massachusetts, now at NECN Television. She's going to take us down the journey that she has followed as a woman of color in the broadcasting business. We'll then have a distinguished panel talking about leading the change, advocating for diversity, countering the naysayers. I'm going to moderate that, and we're having Dr. William Kiernan, who is a department head and head of the department at the University of Massachusetts, where we are going to have the conference. Georgiana Melendez, head of Commonwealth Compact and the chief diversity officer at the university, will be there. We have an entrepreneur, Fran Dickner, who is just a very, very, very strong and compelling entrepreneur here in the greater Boston area. Then we go back to corporate America. Gary Morton is with Liberty Mutual. I talked about him earlier. And Michael Munn represents the hospitality industry. So we have a real good composition for that panel. Then have nine different roundtable sessions, best practices when diversity is on the chopping block, with Dr. Sandra Casey Buford returning with us. She's from Massport. Carol Edson is the Director of Membership for the Northeast Human Resources Association. Then we have Vendors, A Book in You, The Value of Diverse Authors by Tom Campbell. Tom is with King Printing. I've been working with Tom for 10 years. The books that I print through King Printing, and he's going to bring a great roundtable discussion. Then, yes, there is Diversity in Western Massachusetts with Gwendolyn Van Zandt, the executive director of Bridge, which is a great multicultural nonprofit organization in that part of the state. One of the hottest things now are employment resource groups. We'll talk with Lynette Sanders with State Street Corporation, and she's going to get that one. Women in Leadership, Dr. Barbara Addison Reed with Lesley University will be on that. Then social media with Diane Medina and Abhara Shahon. These are two college students who are going to deliver that session. Faith and Multiculturalism with Reverend Dr. Marjorie Jones and Reverend Alvin Riley. And then Diversity in Broadcasting, Amy Hull and Farrar June are going to produce that one. Then Mental Health and Diversity Issues with Marie Doubleday. We'll close out our day with a keynote speaker, Paul Francisco of State Street Corporation. It's going to be a dynamic event. MSSConnect.com is the way where you can sign up for that wonderful event. Hats off to the Red Sox. They did it for the fourth time. I'm so thrilled. I hope that you'll just have a lot of fun going forward watching the parade on Saturday. Thank you all so much for listening to the show today, and we'll be back in 2 weeks after the conference. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas signing off. Have a great weekend.